Hi, my name is John Light, and I've spent over 20 years working throughout all corners of the recruiting world. Our podcast, Drowning in the Tech Talent Pool, is a resource to help you stay afloat and get ahead of your competition. Hi, and welcome to another episode of Drowning in the Tech Talent Pool. I'm John Light, your host and president of Sabretooth Recruiting, Inc. Today, I've got joining me Mark Abbott, founder, CEO, and probably every other title you could think of 90.io and multiple other companies. Mark, thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure, John. Thanks for having
me. Well, so when you and I connected and started talking and prepping for this, I remember looking at your background and asking you some questions, thinking, I have no idea where to start. You know, this man has been really up and down the food chain and all around the marketplace, especially as it relates to technology. But what I found impressive is figuring out how technology and humanity could collaborate. And I was hoping as we get started, you could do a little introduction yourself and 90.io, because I know that's one of your big focuses right now, but also talk about that intersection or that overlap between tech and humanity, if you could, and let's kind of take it away from there.
Yeah, you know, so part of the origin story, you know, goes all the way back to when I started my career. I was in banking, and we go through a training program way back then. They probably still do it, right? We're talking the 80s. And after I came out of the training program, they sent me down to Oklahoma City to work out bad oil and gas laws. And so, you know, I began my career seeing what happens when people don't run companies particularly well, right? And so, you know, so from very early on, I was sort of fascinated by the art and science of company building. And in particular, right, because, you know, when you see what happens when, you know, when companies run into trouble, not only obviously the investors, right, they lose their money, but, you know, the employees lose their jobs, the community loses someone who's, you know, supporting the community, right? Vendors lose money. It's, you know, just, there's not a lot of great things come from it, unless you're a vulture and you can pick up the pieces and have some fun with that. But that experience sort of sent me on this lifelong journey of understanding businesses. And then, you know, when you sort of get the fundamentals of businesses down, then you start to realize that the fundamentals of businesses are all really about the fundamentals of humans, right? Which gets into humanity, right? And so, you know, as I like to say, I spend probably 2 to 3 hours every day, you know, 7 days a week reading and writing. And I've been doing this probably, you know, since the late 80s, honestly, right? So I've gone down a lot of rabbit holes and, you know, all the rabbit holes tend to be just around, you know, around people and organizations. And then, you know, you even get into wanting to understand, you know, sort of other things like politics and government. And so I've kind of become, right, sort of someone who's just fascinated by people and systems. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and then when you start to get fascinated by those things, you start looking, you know, at other things that are related. And so, yeah, I've gone down a lot of different paths, including really, you know, trying to just understand why we are the way we are and back to humanity, right? And why the universe is the way it is.
Probably the deepest rabbit hole there is.
Yeah, I can go down that rabbit hole, right? But to go back and really bring it to the question in terms of technology and humanity, I have a book coming out next year called Work 9.0. Mm-hmm. Part of the book talks about worldviews and, you know, sort of how worldviews have evolved. And I write about there's top-down worldviews, which are belief systems, and then there are bottom-up worldviews, right, which are things that came out of the Enlightenment, right, really trying to understand first principles and evolution, mm-hmm. right? And then I affectionately say there's top-down worldviews, there's bottom-up worldviews, and then there's these sideswipers, right? Which is kind of like postmodernists saying, well, none of this matters, right? We're just living in a matrix, right? But I sort of try to reconcile the bottom-up and the top-down worldviews and sort of try to have a connect, see if I can connect it, you know, all the way from the bottom to the top and back down again. And one of my beliefs is that evolution is simply the incessant advancing of useful information, right? And that, you know, what is technology? But, yeah, what's innovation? And it's all just the advancement of useful information, right? And so, you know, and evolution by definition is things evolve for the better, right? That's core to that word. Mm-hmm. And so we have this incessant sort of evolution of useful information, and useful information includes obviously technology. And I look at it at technology as helping us evolve useful information, and useful information by definition, right? It's useful. And so what is it, what do we do with it, right? Well, I believe every single person wants to matter, right? And so ultimately what technology does and what useful information does is it helps us, broadly speaking, you know, on average, it helps us evolve and feel like we matter, and that the work we're doing matters, and that our existence matters, right? Mm-hmm. For me, technology is here to help us become better and better versions of the best versions of ourselves, right? To matter and help others matter. So I believe there's a, you know, technology is here to help us evolve, right? So, and to evolve as beings who want to matter.
Well, I don't think technology is here ideally to take us over like it's a Terminator movie, like it's Skynet or anything of that nature. Yeah. But I would think that it provides us with a unique opportunity. You know, one of the best books I ever read, I mean, it changed how I kind of viewed the world when I was young. I had a professor in college as an advanced accounting class. I don't think we calculated anything in that class or learned any journal entries, but one of the tasks he had us do was you would read the business section, the Times, or you'd read the Wall Street Journal, find an article on business or an accounting issue or a finance issue, write an essay on it. Not a huge thing, but, you know, a summary that would give you the ability, you know, to show that you have some modicum of understanding and expand your views and this sort of thing. And I remember sitting in his office one day, Dr. Larry Wood, Texas A&M, he actually passed away the following semester, but I'll never forget him or kind of the gift he gave to me. But he said, he pointed a book on his bookshelf and he said, if you read the first 8 chapters of that, it'll give you the equivalent of a master's degree in economics. And I'm like, well, that's dirt cheap. What is the name of this book? And I went out and bought it, and it was Friedrich Hayek's Road to Serfdom. And he was the first author I ever read who found a way to take the human piece of things and the political piece of things and economic piece of things and how they all kind of weave together, and how much power the individual has. And I mean, we see it every day in advertising, you know, that kind of that there are certain demographics. Why do companies advertise to kids who are between the ages of, you know, 5 and 15 or whatever that child is? It's not because they're loaded. It's because they know they can put pressure on their parents to go part with their money to buy them whatever toy du jour, game du jour is out there for the holiday season or whatever it might be. But as individuals, we often don't recognize the amount of power we have in our individual decisions that we make in our own perceived best interest, and how taken as a whole, it can come up with some great results and some great decisions when we truly do that instead of being kind of hemmed in, so to speak. And what I like about technology and part of where it's going is it's almost like, I don't know exactly how to put it and eloquently put things much better than I have, or I would over here, though I largely follow you and agree with, you know, where things are going and your view on this. But I kind of sit back and go, wow, this could help me if I chose to be more human. You know, when you back up to the beginning of what we call civilization, there was a lot of work, blood, sweat, and tears that goes in to producing the opportunity for non-work leisure time, which is often spent in work. And that's where writing might have been developed from, and passing down traditions and history and developing new technologies. But none of that happens until the crop would come in. Fast forward, you know, thousands of years to today, and we have an opportunity to be more of what we are. Technology offers the way to get that crop in to allow us the freedom to do that. And the question, the big question in our time, philosophically, I think, is what do we do with that? That gift of time, which is limited for all of us. And I'd imagine if I pose that question directly to you, you probably have an answer and or some thoughts on that that you would share.
Yeah, I do, right? I mean, ultimately, you know, there are a number of different frameworks And this is stuff I write about actually in Work 9.0, right? But, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs is a great framework, right? I mean, you know, talk about rabbit holes. We can go down that rabbit hole for a while. But, you know, ultimately, wouldn't it be great if the vast majority of humans felt like, had at least self-esteem, if not felt like they just loved what they were doing? You know, how do you make that happen? That's the thing that, you know, I'd like to help, right? Improve the percentage of people in the world who genuinely feel like they love their life, they love what they're doing, right? They've got high trust relationships with the types of relationships that they have, right? There's, I write about seven types of relationships, right? We have a relationship with others. We have a relationship with ourselves, obviously. We have a relationship with things, right? We have a relationship with ideas. You know, we have a relationship with the universe. We have a relationship with time, which is a really interesting one.
Oh, yeah.
Right? But imagine, right, that we have high trust, you know, relationships with all seven types, and that we feel like we got that going. And part of that is that we feel like we're growing and we're flourishing, and we feel like the work we do is valued. We feel like we matter. We feel like, you know, we're, you know, trust is three dimensions, is what my model is, right? There's character, there's competency, and there's connection. And so we feel like, you know, we're working with people that we're aligned with, right? Not everybody aligns with us, obviously. Back to helping people move up Maslow's hierarchy of needs, ultimately giving them the tools to sort of understand where they are and you know, who they are, right? And to lean into, you know, the things that they're great at, and to, you know, to not worry about being less than perfect in other areas, and surround yourself with people who compliment you. And like I said, you know, just, you know, if every day, you know, or the vast majority of the days, you know, you can go to bed or go home from work and feel like, you know, that was a great day. Mm-hmm. And I love what I'm doing. I think
that's a win.
You know, it's a win.
That's a win. Let me ask right. you something. So when you look back on this history that you have and this evolution that you've gone through, right? I mean, the core definition is just change over time, and ideally this progression over time. But how has that impacted what you deliver with 90.io? Because I know 90.io, you have an intersection of progressing people, helping people evolve, be more, be better, recognize their value. But at the same time, you're levering technology to make that happen. Can you kind of give some color around that?
You know, the big idea behind 90 goes, it really started when I was sitting on boards, right? So I went from being a lender and an investor to being you know, senior partner in a private equity firm, sitting on a bunch of boards. And I honestly, when I first did that significantly, sat on a bunch of boards, I was kind of surprised that a number of these companies, frankly, weren't just like mastering the fundamentals. Mm-hmm. There's like 20 concepts, tools, and disciplines you need to master to be, you know, have a decent shot at building a pretty darn good company. And when I say a company, you know, I'm talking about something that, you know, that you could sell, right? Or you could pass on, gladly have someone take over leading it from you, right? And so this is something that, you know, has the ability to endure, and you know, it's got a position in the marketplace, and it generates it, you know, it has high trust relationships with all of its stakeholders, right? Including its investors. So it's generating a decent risk adjusted return on the capital that's been invested. But, you know, there's just fundamental things you need to do, right? You need, you know, and fundamental tools you need, like you need an org chart to make sure everybody knows who's, you know, responsible for what. You need goals and a goal setting system, right? You need KPIs to understand what's working and what's not working. You need meetings to make sure that you're all on the same page, not just on a weekly basis, but on a quarterly basis to update your priorities, and on an annual basis to look back and update your longer term goals and things like that. You need to figure out how to develop people. You need to figure out how to lead people and coach people, right? And there's like 20, you know, plus or minus concepts, tools, and disciplines that you want to master. We talk about 9 core competencies, really fundamentally, to become a really good company builder. And 90 basically is this platform that contains the concepts, the tools, and the disciplines that you need. It's cloud-based, so it supports companies that, you know, if everybody's working in the office, awesome. If there's a hybrid, awesome. If it's work from anywhere, awesome, right? We can support you and make sure that everybody's on the same page. And it's a system of record around to-dos and goals and feedback and all those, that kind of stuff. And, you know, ultimately what, you know, I believe that the concepts, tools, and disciplines are all relatively straightforward. They've been around for a long, long time, right? In some regards, it's actually not that complicated. The journey is complicated because you need to learn how to master these things. But ultimately, if you become a really good leader and you build a really good company that has a really good culture, ultimately what you're doing is you're helping people thrive, right? I deeply believe that work is a four-letter word that is a great word, not a bad word, right? And that, you know, you can't achieve self-actualization, let alone self-esteem, without work. And, you know, and it's not just the work that you get paid for, right? We work on our health, we work on our relationships, we work on you know, obviously on our competencies, right? We work on our spiritual being, right? We work on our health. So we're working, you know, on a bunch of different things. And when, you know, when the things that we're working on are in pretty good shape, when we're making progress in a manner that's suitable for our levels of ambition, because, you know, not everybody has the same level of ambition. Not everybody wants to be a crazy person like me and work 60 to 80 hours a week for 40 plus years, right? We're all different. But ultimately, you know, what we're trying to do is help people build organizations where everybody's focused, right? They know what's important. They're all aligned. They agree on this stuff. And then they genuinely love doing what they're doing and they're thriving. And if you create an organization that's focused, aligned, and thriving, it's amazing how much better it is at doing the things that matter, ultimately, you know, at becoming, you know, very productive, right? So people feel good about what they're working on. It becomes very resilient because every one of us, whether you're an individual, you're a country, you're a company, right? You're a government, we all get punched in the face every now and then.
Sometimes, right? Some of us more than every now and then.
So And so resiliency is really important, mm-hmm. right? And so you want to build a company that's productive. You want to build a company that's resilient. But ultimately, you want to build a place where people genuinely love going to work and show up and as their best self. And so, you know, that's what we talk about: extraordinarily productive, humane, right, and resilient. And so the humanity is something that, you know, part of my mission is to help people build great companies. And I believe, like I just said, they're right, they're extraordinarily productive, they're humane, they're resilient, and they're places where people are focused, aligned, and thriving. And you know, we're constantly working on our platform to help people to make it easier, right? To simplify the hard work associated with building a great organization.
And it is hard, you know, and what I'm hearing kind of what underlies this in part is there's a level of accountability in the platform that it drives, because that helps harness people's productivity, gives them the opportunity to shine. And, you know, some of the best memories I have when I was much younger, because with this beard, I'm probably 30 pounds away from being a mall Santa Claus next year, but much younger, you know, there was a great feeling at the end of a football practice or end of a project where you did well. Mm-hmm. And you might be tired and you might not have wanted to get out there on the field or get into the classroom, you know, or type the paper out, or back then handwrite that rascal. But when you've done it, you're like, you know, that's the stuff. That's the feeling. That's the value. I can see the impact. I can look back at what I did and go, that's good. And I think accountability is a huge piece of that, but it's so easy, I think, and work today, in life today in general, to get distracted and get taken off where our value prop is or whatever our value impact we're pursuing might be, because suddenly we're looking at our devices or, you know, in my case, I've got 6 kids. And let me tell you, there's always somebody unhappy. There's always somebody sick or thinking about getting sick. There's always somebody who's got this or that and needs help with the homework. I wouldn't change it for the world, but it's sometimes difficult to navigate what's critical value impact versus this, you know, this would be fun to do, or it needs to be done, but it's not going to have the same impact, if that makes sense. And my hunch is, when you're talking about 90, it's a way to engender accountability that gets everybody in the same direction, moving at a similar pace, so they can actually be a team. And that helps everyone's value. That helps everyone's self-perspective, their viewpoint of themselves, and it drives alignment. And I think that if I'm reading that right, if I'm hearing that right, that's a pretty beautiful thing.
It's interesting though, right? So accountability in and of itself is not what you really want, right? You really want agreements first, right? Because if there's not an agreement, then it's kind of hard
accountability.
to keep people accountable for it, right? So now if there's agreements, right, and someone says, I agree to do this, right, and they don't live up to the agreement, that's an easy conversation, mm-hmm. right? Now the question is, what are the essential agreements that you need in order to create a highly accountable organization, right? Because, you can't force people to be accountable. They are or they're not,
right?
And so really what I like to talk about and focus on is agreements, right? So core values, as an example, are essential agreements that help ensure that we have a relatively explicit, coherent, hopefully resonant, right, culture where these are the, in our company, we have 6 core values, right? Where these are the behaviors that are really important for us, and they make it easier for us to work together, and they make it easier for us to talk about, when things are going weird or worse, right? Because people are exhibiting behaviors that are antithetical to who we are, as a company. So, core values are an agreement. Another agreement would be your ideal customers, back to focus, right? Everybody knows, well, I shouldn't say everybody knows, right? But if you're running a business, most people know that you can't be all things to all people, right? So that's 2 things. One is people. Mm-hmm. So who are the people that you're focusing on? Who are your ideal customers, right? And that's psychographic, demographic, and geographic, right? Getting really clear on that. And then things, right? So what is it you're selling, right? And does it resonate with, your ideal customers? Can you articulate it, or better yet, can your ideal customers, will your ideal customers say, these are the reasons we were on a 90 as an example, right? And they consistently say the same thing that you would say, which is awesome, because then they're telling people, hey, we run on 90. It's awesome. It's really mm-hmm. helped us, focus, align, and thrive. And so now all of a sudden they're saying the same thing that you'd like them to say. And they're not saying because you forced them to say, it's because they're buying what they're selling to it, right? Yeah. So your unique value proposition is an agreement, right? And it's an agreement inside the company, right? That this is really important, folks. Like we really lean into from day one. We've leaned into, sort of bending over backwards sounds like a horrible expression, but we really did everything we could to provide customer service. So that's a thing, right? And so there's the roles and responsibilities and accountabilities associated with your seat. Those are agreements, right? Now more than ever, we need data to see when things are not. What's working and what's not working. And we're really not focused on what's working, because if it's working, right, awesome.
Right.
We stand back and cheer from the sidelines. But if things aren't working well, it'd be nice if we had data that we agreed tells us things aren't working well. So now it's a good conversation, right? There's a KPI, there's a target that indicates there's an issue. And so now, you and I can have a conversation around this without having a lot of emotion, mm-hmm. right? And so these agreements, they create accountability, they create alignment, right? They create focus. So I'm more of an agreements guy than an accountability guy, because ultimately I think accountability is an output, not an input.
Oh, well, I don't know. I just saw a big thumbs up pop on the screen. I don't know how that happened, but it was like, bam, and it just popped up in a bubble. I think it's a great point that you got to have the agreement before you have the accountability. Holding someone accountable for something they're not agreeable to in the first place, it ain't going to work. And that's very true. And,
no, it's toxic.
And part of what I'm picking up too, and I'm a firm believer in this. When you look, I focus on talent acquisition. That's my livelihood. That's 20 plus years of my career. But I look at talent acquisition, talent retention, and talent management as this flywheel. And you're constantly mm-hmm. putting energy into it. And in my experience, if the management and retention pieces are good, the acquisition piece, attracting and acquiring that talent, bringing it on board is a whole lot easier. But if the talent acquisition piece is just in fuego, and you've got the best people in the world working for you, bringing you the best people that you could ever hope, and your retention and management, either one of those is sideways, you better hope you got a strong talent acquisition function, because you're going to need it with your turnover. And, yeah, you know, it's almost like you're taking energy out of the flywheel instead of building that energy up into it as it spins. It sounds like to me, part of what I'm picking up, maybe this is an output that something that's generated with 90 and applying it across an organization, is it becomes a whole lot easier to retain talent and to manage talent
and to trap.
Yeah, well, I mean, by default, it's going to make it a lot easier, because people are going to see that. They're going to talk with people, and they're going to pick up on the vibe. They're going to hear the stories, and they're going to want to be a part of something that leaves them feeling like that at the end of the day.
It's a knock on wood, so I'm going to knock on wood. You know, this year, I think we'll have put out 83 offers and had 80 acceptances.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah.
Right. So, and that's right back to the, and then on the other side, right, very low unwanted avoidable turnover, mm-hmm. right, where you just like, you know, just, oh man, that shouldn't have happened kind of a thing, right? Because some turnover is good things, right? So one of the things I talk out of both sides of my mouth on is that I'm very proud that I have at least somewhere between 10 and 20, and I really should go check mm-hmm. this out, but I'm probably closer to 20 people who've worked for me who now run businesses or
oh, wow.
have run businesses, right? And so I'm very proud of that. I used to say years and years ago, you know, if when I was running a lending company, predominantly a lending company, you know, if someone got called up to the big show, right, to become a partner at a private equity firm or, you know, so, or some other, right, more sophisticated, mm-hmm. higher paying kind of organization, right? You didn't like that feeling of losing someone, but you know, you can't blame them for, you know, it's like you're going from the minor leagues to the big leagues, right? So you can't blame them for wanting to take that step. And so, you know, when I talk about unwanted avoidable, I'm talking about the people that, you know, if someone goes to a competitor, that's like, that's
a knife in the heart.
That sucks. But if they're going on to something bigger and better, you know, if someone's going on and going from being a leader to now all of a sudden going and becoming a CEO of another company,
I mean,
you know, it still sucks, but I'm really delighted.
Yeah, and you've got to be, because if you're not, it gets picked up on. You know, one of my philosophies when I've trained recruiters over the years is, you know, you may decide this isn't for you, or you may decide to go elsewhere somewhere down the road. But the one of my core goals, one of my core purposes in training and developing people has always been, I want you to have every skill you could possibly need to shine in our environment or some other context. I want you to be able to mm-hmm. have the skills that if you had to go do this somewhere else, you could not only do it, but you could outperform what you've done before, what other people are doing. Because end of the day, to me, it's about valuing people enough to put something into them. Otherwise, you're just not going to get the best out of them. And
yeah, well, it's back to trust, right? There's a book I love called Trust Factor by the late Dr. Paul Zak. And he talks about the 8 levers. And he's a neuroscientist, was a neuroscientist. And what he did was he measured levels of oxytocin mm-hmm. in individuals and in teams. And through all of his research, came up with, you know, basically there are 8 really important levers. And then he was smart enough to basically turn it into an acronym called oxytocin, right? And so it's about being open, right? So one O is open, another O is ovation for, right? So
right.
you're celebrating people. Another, the I is for investing, right? You're talking about investing in people. Obviously, the C is care, right? So you care about people. I twist one of his, the E or the X, right? His expectations and back to the accountability stuff and agreement stuff, right? I believe expectations are actually toxic. They're cowardly, they're bullying, and they're lazy, right? We don't want to have expectations. We want to ultimately turn those expectations into agreements mm-hmm. because then, like we said earlier, those conversations when the agreements aren't being met, it's so much easier, right? And then getting people to work on things, if they agree to do it, they genuinely agree to do it, right? That's obviously a lot easier. So yeah, you know, you get back to, you know, don't need to go through the rest of them. But the point here is, you know, back to caring about people and investing in people, right? That's it's core to trust.
Absolutely. All right. So question I've had kind of sitting in the back of my mind. When you look out in the landscape of all that you've accomplished and where you're at today and where you what you want to do going forward, I'm really curious if you could share something, and it doesn't have to necessarily be business. It could be very personal, but I often ask our guests toward the end, you know, what are you passionate about? You know, what's kind of that passion project? And I can already identify, I think, probably a handful if we were to start making a list, one of which you're clearly maybe even more than I am, I think, a continuous learner. You're looking to learn, and it's not a frivolous thing. And it may and it may only go so far down each rabbit hole, right? But you want to know what's going on, be able to explain it, and know that if that's knowledge you need, you know where to get it, the right questions to ask. And I could probably name two or three others pretty easily, but I'm curious if you look at all you've done, which is a lot, the people you've helped, your coaching tree? We always talk about that in sports. There's a coaching tree from Bill Belichick, you know, to produce all these other coaches, but you've produced.
Actually, just so you know, Saban is amazing at that. And Belichick's actually not so amazing.
Yeah, I know. Saban's ridiculously good. And what's always fascinated me about that relative to Saban, it's only been recently that coaches from his tree have started beating him. You know, whether it's Kirby Smart or, you know, whoever else. I mean, Jimbo Fisher's won some games against him, and but it's been few and far in between. Yeah. I mean, he's still the massive roots in that tree. Yeah. But, I mean, you've got 20-somewhat-odd. You've sent business leaders out there over the course of time that you generated, which I think is fantastic. Because I think one of our obligations is to teach people to be teachers, in a sense. Help us understand a little bit of what makes you tick and what that passion would be for you.
90 is my passion right now, and my... And this will sound arrogant, I think, but you know, I intend to continue to run this for many more years, at least until I'm 70, is what I've said. That said, you know, if someone with and this is where it's going to sound arrogant, right? if someone with more drive, a better vision, and more energy comes along, right, I will get out of the way. But yeah, my focus is on 90 but it's, you know, it's taking it to that level where we really are helping more and more, you know, humans thrive, right? And, you know, great workplaces, because ultimately, you know, today we have going on 11,000 companies running on 90 and, you know, I want to increase that number significantly, right? And then ultimately we believe that the stuff that we're teaching, the stuff that we're helping companies master, that it's not just good for the companies and not just good for the employees, but ultimately those employees are part of communities. And then I'm a huge believer that small and mid-sized businesses are the lifeblood of a healthy society.
Absolutely.
Ultimately, you know, just helping the small and mid-sized business communities in, you know, predominantly the free world, right? We're in 40 countries right now. We have clients in 40 countries right now. But just helping those communities get stronger, and you know, and helping useful information evolve, right? By because those small mid-sized businesses, you know, they're the most open to both positive and negative feedback loops, and so even OpenAI, right? What it's only 750 employees. It's still a relatively small business in some regards, right? Or a mid-sized business. It's funny. It's worth obviously the valuation.
Through the roof.
Yeah, that's a big business. But it's but it you know, just a couple of years ago, it was a couple hundred people. So my focus is really, you know, making the world, putting a dent in the world, helping more and more people feel like they're genuinely thriving, and doing it through small and mid-sized businesses, doing it by helping small and mid-sized businesses, you know, as I said earlier, right, become, you know, extraordinarily productive, humane, and resilient.
Awesome. Awesome message. And in my opinion, an amazing mission to be on. I like the verve. I like the vibe. I like the energy and everything that goes into it. And I'm grateful, Mark, that you carved off some time to join us today on Drowning the Tech Talent Pool. If we'd carved off about 3 hours here, we'd probably just be able to keep going, so we might have to circle up on that sometime.
Yeah, there's tons of rabbit holes out there that are fascinating to get into.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, and then some. Yeah. That's I. I'm not going to start breaking out in song about these are a few of my favorite things, you know, having conversations like this, but it's pretty close, pretty close. Thanks again, Mark, and I'll look forward to talking with you again soon.
You've been listening to Drowning in the Tech Talent Pool. This podcast is sponsored by Sabretooth. Sabretooth improves the quality of hire and speeds up the time to fill specialized machine learning, data engineering, data science, and developer roles, stretching tech recruiting budgets further by bringing the precision of retained search and the speed of contingent search to the market in one complete solution. Find out more at sbr2th.com and follow me, John Light, on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening.